Okay, next up is Andrew. So Andrew is also one of our presenters. He comes from academia. He's a first-year PhD student at the African Institute of Financial Markets and Risk Management at GCT. He's completed an MPhil in Maths of Finance, and prior to that did an actuarial qualification in sort of business science. And I suppose as part of his master's degree, he completed a minor dissertation entitled Latent State and Parameter Estimation of Stochastic Volatility Jump Models via Particle Filtering. And he's going to share some of that with us now. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much for having me. As Julie said, my name is Andrew. I'm at the African Institute of Financial Markets and Risk Management at UCT. I work with Mario. And so today I'm going to be talking to you about my master's research in latent or hidden state and parameter estimation using particle filtering. And so my work was predominantly in stochastic volatility and jump models, where we put a lot of emphasis on the idea of sort of simultaneous estimation of latent states and parameter estimation. Today I'm going to be giving you sort of like just a brief overview on how particle filtering works and sort of the paradigm in which we could potentially do simultaneous estimation. Please forgive me, this is actually the first time I'm ever presenting in front of an audience this big, so you're going to have to forgive me if I appear a little bit. Thank you. Okay, so the outline of my talk. So I'm just going to give you an introduction to filtering. So the filtering problem, what it means to estimate latent states and parameters. Then I'm going to give you a sort of also then an overview of what particle filtering is. And then I'm going to work you through some very basic implementations. And so the implementations that I'll be going through are sort of in sort of my field, which is more sort of financial mathematics. So it's going to be to do with option pricing and stock prices, but they can work with any stochastic model that you have that has sort of underlying drivers in it. But I'll talk about this. Okay, so the introduction to my talk. So let's talk a little bit about what the filtering problem is. So the idea of filtering is we want to separate an unobservable hidden state from a source of noise. So the idea is that we gather these series of observations which could potentially have an underlying structure to it, or it could just be white noise. And so we want to be able to say, well, can we actually try and identify what these underlying sources of randomness to them are? And so this has several different applications. It's actually was sort of first pioneered in the engineering literature, and then it then spread out into the finance literature. And so it's used in GPS signal processing, air tracking processing, and then for more particular to what I do, it's in to separate sort of model implied noise from a series of say stock prices or option prices or any observable series that we can guard and look. And so why I say model implied is if we say, well, we assume that some kind of stochastic volatility or stochastic intensity or stochastic interest rate model, say, we want to then be able to take what we can actually observe and try and separate out those sources of noise which we assume govern the processes that we can see. And then so furthermore, what we'd also like to try and do, unfortunately, the point where I got to in my research, we weren't actually able to do this simultaneously. We weren't actually able to both estimate the latent states and the model parameters, but I sort of set out a nice framework in which we can do one with the other, or we could separate model parameters knowing latent states or separate latent states knowing parameters, but unfortunately we couldn't actually do them together. But there is a fairly large bank of literature which does show that it is possible, and in my conclusion I'll go through sort of my hypothesis on why we couldn't do it and further research that could be done to actually do it. And so yeah, so that's so ideally we'd like to learn model parameters, and so in the filtering sort of space, that equates to actually treating our model parameters themselves as latent states which we think of as evolving through time, but what are actually constant. And so we're hoping that through time, as we start estimating our model parameters, they'll sort of converge to one steady state, which we would then take as our model parameter. And then there's other nice byproducts of particle filtering in particular, which allow us to detect and test validity of certain models. Okay, so let's move on to what exactly particle filtering is. And so the definition of particle filtering is it's a sequential Monte Carlo method used for filtering any non-linear or non-Gaussian stochastic model. And so this differs from the sort of classic deterministic filters, such as the Kármán filter and its extensions, that generally only work in sort of very linear Gaussian models. And so the algorithm, I've just laid the four sort of primary stages out here, but we'll go through them in a little bit more detail later on. But those include propagation, measurement, prediction, and update. The algorithm itself relies on certain prior information, such as the distribution of our latent states, some kind of measurement equation where we can measure the influence of our latent states on the observed process. So our end goal when we get to particle filtering to try and solve the filtering problem is that what we're going to end up with is, or what we're hoping to end up with, is actually a series of distributions of our hidden state process as we move through time. And so unlike the deterministic filters, which would give you a point estimate of the process that we're trying to estimate, we actually get an entire distribution. So if we wanted just a point estimate, we could just take the mean of that distribution. But let's say, example, we want to say a function of that, we want an estimate of the function of that process, we can use our estimated distribution to actually give us an estimate of that function. Okay, so now I'll go through sort of a basic implementation of particle filtering to try and explain it a little bit better. Okay. So the context that we're going to be working in is, so let's suppose that we have a model of this form, where X, in this case, is a process which we can go out and observe. We can actually gather a series of observations of X, and our model implies that X is governed by some function of itself at the previous time point, some unobservable state, which we then want to estimate, the Z process, and then a series of parameters, which I just clumped together into this capital theta, which we just say are all the model parameters for both. And then we say that our unobserved process, this Z function, is again a function of just itself and the model parameters. So the Z we can't see. Okay. And so I've said here that F and G are possibly nonlinear functions, and which we are happy to deal with in particle filtering. And so furthermore, if we can observe these, if we can observe this stock price XT, then we could possibly price some kind of derivative price. Here I've just said we could price an option price based on the observations of X and Z in this case. Okay, so just a basic example of how this actually works is let's consider a simple example where we could actually go out and observe a series of option prices. But we weren't actually able to observe the stock price, which implied those option prices, and we wanted to somehow filter out those stock prices. So if you imagine from the previous slide, our observed process is the option prices, and our unobserved processes are the share prices which determine those option prices. And so here I've just, this is basically just an implementation of the algorithm, and so I'll go through a little bit more detail how the algorithm actually worked, but at the end of the day, what we get is we get just to basically The dotted line here is sort of our estimated stock price, where the blue line is the actual simulated stock price that we tried to recover. Okay, and so the context that I sort of did a lot of my research in was on the filtering of stochastic volatility and more in particular stochastic volatility with jump processes involved. In that context, we have a series of, say, stock prices and option prices, say, and we want to then filter out the volatility process, which our model implies, is the model implied sort of source of randomness in our observed process. And then later on, we then ask if it's possible to filter out both the unobserved process and the model parameters themselves, knowing just the observed process. Okay, so from here on out, we'll just be working to sort of illustrate how the algorithm works and and it gives a sort of more an easier way to understand the algorithm. But from here on out, we're just going to be working on a simulated data set. So the idea is that if we have a model for both our observed and unobservable processes, we could go and simulate an instance of both X and Z in this case. And then what we would then say is, well, let's pretend like we don't have the Z, and we actually want to then go and recover the Z knowing only X. And because we do actually know what the real value of Z is, we can check to see how accurate our filtering technique was. So yeah, we hope that the estimated path, the output of our algorithm, when looking at Z, will be close to the actual simulated path. Okay, so as I mentioned at the start, there is certain prior information that we need when we begin the latent state estimation and the parameter estimation. And so what we need is first of all, for our unobservable process, we need an initial distribution for our unobserved process. I mean, most often we just have sort of one particular value that we would assign our unobserved process at the start of our algorithm, and so the initial distribution is not too necessary, but we can do that in general. We then also need a transition distribution for our unobserved process, and then with the transition distribution, we need a measurement equation. And so the measurement equation I have there, you can think of it as a sort of just assigning the likelihood of observing the unobserved process that we've now estimated, given what we can see about the observed process. And so the idea behind that is that when we then come to the algorithm, what we're going to do is we're going to simulate what's called a swarm of the unobserved processes, and then use the measurement equation to go and assign a weight to each simulated unobserved process, which we then can use to formulate the distribution of our unobserved process through time. Okay, and then furthermore, if we want to move on to parameter estimation, we need a prior distribution for our parameter set, and then from there we need a way of updating our parameter estimates as we move through time. And so you can think of that as, well, if we have an estimated unobserved process and we have an observed process, we can possibly use some kind of maximum likelihood estimate to come up with an update of what our parameters are, or we could make use of some kind of Bayesian posterior estimates, making use of our prior distribution of our parameter set, or because we're actually estimating distributions through time and not point estimates, we could actually just simulate the parameters in the next step using the distribution that we estimated in the previous step. And so all three of these methods are investigated in my dissertation. I'm not going to go through too much detail in this presentation, and there is also a bank of literature supporting each one of these. Okay, here's the overview of the algorithm that I used to give you guys the example with the option prices being observed and the stock prices being unobserved. So here we've just initialized, so ignoring any kind of initial distribution and just setting both values to some fixed value. And here we're actually trying to filter out the log stock price, just because in the Black-Scholes framework, the log stock price is often easier to work with. The algorithm works as follows. As we move, so capital M here are the number of simulated instances of our unobserved process we would do at each time point, and our capital N here are the number of time points that we want to move through. So you can think of capital N is the number of observations you have of your observed process. And so at each observation, we want to try and estimate what the unobserved process was that was the driver towards the observed process. Okay? So the first stage, the propagation stage, that entails us simulating a swarm, simulating capital M number of our unobserved processes at a particular time point using our transition distribution that we that is part of our prior knowledge set. Then with that, we can come up with using our measurement equation, we can then come up with sort of the likelihood of observing each one of those, each estimated value in our swarm of unobserved process, in our unobserved estimates. Then with those likelihoods, we can then come up with a weight, which we then assign to each member of our swarm. Then once we have those weights, we can then re-weight our swarm of unobserved estimations in order to get the distribution of our now unobserved process. And now we can do this throughout time, and what we're left with is we're left with a distribution of each of our unobserved process as we move through time. Okay? And so, yes, that's what I've said at the end here. I've said that we're left with, at each time, we're left with sort of an empirical estimate of what the distribution is of our unobserved process. Okay. Okay. So in my research, as I said, I was interested in filtering volatility and jumps. And so the first graph I have here is is one particular instance of our algorithm applied in a stochastic volatility model. I think I included on the next slide. In this case, we're trying to estimate the volatility process. And so what we're seeing here is something that actually is quite intuitive in the sense, because our blue line here is what the actual simulated process was, which drove our, so it's the actual instance of our unobserved process, and the orange line is the estimated process which we got from the particle filtering algorithm. And as you can see, it's incredibly volatile in the beginning, it's quite volatile in the beginning, and the volatility kind of sort of drops off as we move forward through time. And this makes intuitive sense, because as we move through time, we're able to incorporate more information about our observed process. So near the end, we have observed a lot of our observed process, and so our estimates become far more accurate, and so our variance of our empirical distribution is a lot lower as we move through time. So moving on to the estimates of the jump process. The jump process estimates look like this, and these estimates weren't too satisfying. They were nice in the sense that we were kind of getting the right times. And so what you're seeing here is the blue lines are the actual jumps that were implied in the model, and the dotted lines are trying to estimate not only the time at which the jump occurred, but also the size of the jump. And so they're all right. They get the right time, but they miscalculate the magnitude of the jump slightly. And so I've just also included the model at the end, just so you can see what kind of framework we're working in. So we have a stochastic volatility model for our X process here, where the stochastic volatility is our Z process, and it's driven like such, where these epsilons are just normal random variables. Okay, now if we move on to so let me just remind you where we're trying to go. So right now we've come up with a way of getting our latent states given a series of observed states, but what we're really trying to get is that we'd like to actually be able to estimate not only the Z process, but also be able to estimate each of those model parameters in our model. So where we want to go from here is we want to try and incorporate sort of a Bayesian framework. So I've just included this slide just as a sort of reminder that. So at each time point, what we can do is we can come up with a sort of a posterior distribution of our parameter set, knowing what our observed process is, and we would just use Bayes' theorem like so. And so this gives us a way of sampling our parameter set at each time point, and then using those parameters that we've now sampled in our swarm to then come up with a likelihood of observing each of those parameters. So it's very similar to the latent state. The similarity here being that this new distribution that we get from Bayes' theorem is essentially our transition distribution for our parameter set. Okay, and so using this coupled with the likelihood factorization theorem, it decomposes the parameter estimation and hidden state estimation, and it sort of separates them. So we're able to actually try and estimate our hidden state process, and then using that, we can then try and estimate our parameters, hopefully simultaneously. Okay, so the results that I have for this particular model are two of them are quite satisfactory, the other two are not so much. So the graphs that I'm showing you here are from the same model, but in this case we're trying to simulate, we're trying to estimate the parameters theta, kappa, sigma, and mu. And so you can see the left two graphs appear to explore the state space quite widely at the start when not much is known about the observed process, but as we then move through time and we are able to gather more information, they sort of calm down and tend towards the true parameter, which we actually knew because we're working on this simulated data set. The right two graphs don't really appear to really have any nice convergence. Maybe the bottom one would have gotten there eventually if we had extended time a bit more. But yeah, as I said, as I've mentioned, unfortunately, we weren't actually able to do these simultaneously. So the results that I'm showing here are actually having set the jump process and the stochastic volatility to be the original processes. So we're actually not estimating them. We're assuming they are known, and we're wanting to get the model parameters. So what I've shown you, the two sets of graphs that I've shown you are now knowing model parameters, can we get to latent states? And knowing latent states, can we get to model parameters? And so at the start, when myself and my supervisor set out to do this research, we really hoped that we would, or at least I would be able to do these two things simultaneously, but unfortunately we weren't. And so I'd like to conclude my talk with just sort of some like a hypothesis on why I think I wasn't able to do this. Okay, so to conclude everything that I've done, my dissertation really was just to formulate a simple and easy to implement algorithm for filtering latent states and estimating parameters in a stochastic volatility and jump model. But obviously, in practice, we'd like to do simultaneous estimation, and so my guess at least is that we could possibly conclude further research to try and get to the simultaneous estimation. And I hypothesize that, well, first of all, if in the examples that I've shown you, we're only considering a one-dimensional observable process. So it's quite simple in that we're just saying, well, if we can see the stock price and we have a model for the stock price, can we get to the volatility process and can we get to the model parameters? But what if we incorporated more into our observed process? So instead of just observing one stock price, we observe 10 of them, or 10 stock prices coupled with 5 option prices coupled with who knows what. But if we could augment more information into our observed process to then try and filter out all these various states that we're wanting, that should, you know, intuitively yield better results. Secondly, I think in my paper, I include quite a lot of sort of rigor into deriving the Bayesian posterior distributions for each of the parameters in the model that I showed you. But I think more could have been done there in terms of marginalizing out more states that we're trying to estimate. So you can imagine that when we get to calculating our Bayesian posterior distributions, we have a dependence on states that we're trying to estimate, which is never ideal if you're trying to, if you're conditioning on something that you've already tried to estimate. So it's not something, you're not conditioning on something that's observable. So ideally, I'd like to go put more effort into marginalizing these distributions so that we're only conditioning on something that we can actually see, not necessarily something that we have to estimate. And then finally, possibly these are just kind of shots in the dark, but maybe using some kind of smoothing on the parameter estimates to disallow explosion of variance, because often we saw that when we tried to, when you did actually try and do simultaneous estimation of both the hidden states and parameters, the distributions of the parameters never calmed down. They were just too big, and the variance of the distributions were just too big, and the variance never calmed down. So we were never able to get an accurate point estimate. If we ran the simulation twice, the values of the parameters, according to our algorithm, would be vastly different. And so obviously that's not ideal. And then finally, potentially more informative prior distributions that we give to in our calculation of the Bayesian, of the posterior distributions of our parameter set. So all in all, I think we're relatively quite happy with the results in the hidden state estimation, in the i.e. coming up with the estimates of the stochastic volatility and the jump process. I think that was quite successful, and the model was quite easy to implement. It was just then moving on to the parameter estimation, which didn't work out so well. but yeah, that's it. Thank you for listening.
Are there any questions from the team? Okay.
Thanks for the talk. I have two comments to make. I faced similar problems in my PhD when I was using particle filtering and also static parameter estimation, and also found that it was a challenging task. I see from the look of the algorithm that you showed us, seemed to be the bootstrap particle filter. So the first question was just, did you maybe consider like an auxiliary particle filter or the uncentered particle filter? I'm sure you're aware there's quite a variety of different variations that can help in certain instances, you know, if you have a lot of particle degeneracy. And
yeah.
So maybe to also kind of identify, is it a degeneracy problem? Because you're increasing the dimensionality, it could be a problem there. Yeah, and then just my second comment would be perhaps, I'm not sure if you've heard of particle Markov chain Monte Carlo, which is an approach which seems to work quite well for the joint state estimation and the parameter estimation, but it's offline. So I don't know if it also depends on if you'd like to, you know, filter in real time or if you can do like batch processing. But as you mentioned, the smoothing, if you're doing more of a batch approach, then I think you'll probably have better chances.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, maybe to answer the second question first, we haven't considered the particle MCMC filters. I've read a little bit about them, but we haven't actually tried implementing that. The first question, it's a good question. We did sort of shop around quite a bit to looking at the various algorithms, but the decision mostly for this presentation, and in the paper we do kind of explore various other algorithms, but our main results were centered around the work done by Andrew Galatly, who uses the bootstrap filter for simultaneous estimation, in stochastic volatility jump process, and manages to do the model parameters at the same time. So I mean, at the start of my research, you know, I saw this paper and saw the algorithm that they're using and thought, well, this shouldn't be too difficult. They seem to they managed to do it right, but yeah, we just couldn't. So that's not a very good answer, but that's.
Okay, since it's your first time, let's make it a bit more fun. Now, I just want to check. I'm used to now the more traditional time series models where you need on the left-hand side and right-hand side two stationary models where the trend is removed. Otherwise, you might find a good fit, but it might just be spurious. You might prices go up generally, stocks in London goes up, so you'll find a good fit. So usually you difference. So in your model, it looks like you work with the actual prices, or is there a difference in somewhere in the modeling? Or is that an issue in this kind of modeling?
So we're working with the log prices, so it is it is in itself a difference model. I don't quite understand your question, because in the sense this is we're discretizing a continuous time model, and so we're just taking in this particular example what is the Bates stochastic volatility model. So we're just taking that, discretizing it, and then seeing what we can do with that. I don't know if that answers your question. Maybe we can chat afterwards.
Yeah, we can. Yeah, I think maybe I don't understand enough of the model. Thank you.
Okay,
I think on that note, we'll probably break for tea, but thanks very much for choosing us as your audience to test drive your presentation of your work, and we really appreciate you being here. Thanks very much.